And so we're glad to be back. While I was in Florida, I was sitting in a church service, and someone, I can't remember who it was, I think I know where it was, but someone read the Psalm chapter 1. And so I want to read that. First of all, Psalm chapter 1. And then if you read the bulletin, you've seen my title, you probably realize the message is coming out of that verse 1. But I think I think I'll just read that entire psalm. Psalm 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. And therefore the ungodly shall not stand in judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. And there in that verse 1, for some reason, that expression, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, stood out to me. I'm sure that happens to you sometimes, as you're reading through a passage or someone else is reading it, something just kind of jumps out at you. But I saw that, and I thought, now what does that mean? What does it mean to sit in the seat of the scornful? What does that look like? And then I also had to ask the question, do I do it? Is that sometimes me? Is it something that's easy to do? We see here that it's something that is put right alongside of the ungodly and the sinners. And so it's included right in that same list there is the seat of the scornful. Just for way of definition, the scornful, I think it's kind of one of those words that, yeah, I know what that means. Now let's see, what does it mean? You do that with words too sometimes. We think we know what it means, but it's kind of hard to put it in words. But just like in Strong's Concordance and getting some definitions and the way it's used sometimes, a boaster was there. Mocker. And by the way, that word mocker, as I go through, I'll probably kind of use those two, the scornful and the mocker, interchangeably. Because those seem to be very closely related to each other. The scornful and the mocker. A divider. That came up. A divider, a person that is a divider. And then also that it came up to be inflated. To be inflated. And so those were just some of the words that came up in connection with this whole thing of being a scorner. Is it an important subject? I think so. Go over to 2 Peter. 2 Peter, chapter 3. And I think we realize that human nature being what it is, some things never change. People that believe in evolution, things keep getting better. But I've not seen, as I read history, I don't see it that way. Probably getting worse. But some things just never change. Human nature is pretty much the same back then, several thousand years ago, as it is right now. But in 2 Peter 3, verse 3, it says, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers. Now, here we're using that word scoffer. Walking after their own lust. And in this case, they're saying that where is the promise of his coming? They're saying, when is the Lord ever coming back? You know, it's the same that it's always been, and so on. And so it's talking about here that in the last days there's going to be scoffers. And how true that is. So it was already back when David wrote that very first psalm. And it's still true that there is a lot of scoffing. Now, what are the marks of a scorner? What are the marks of a scorner? Now, I have over here, I have a couple of chairs. I'm going to call them seats. And as you look at those two chairs or those two seats, which one would you say would describe the seat of the scorner?
The taller one.
The taller one. Why? Okay, in order to be a scorner, we're going to have to elevate ourselves. So, this is talking about sitting in the seat of the scorner. And so I sit up here, and I can look down on the rest of you. And then the person that's beside me, I can look down on them. And I can see all their faults. I can see all the things they do wrong. And because I'm up above them. And so I kind of like in this chair. This chair has got its place. And it's a good place. But I had to think about that the chair or the seat of the scorner is one that is elevated. And that's the person that says, I know better than you do. I'm wiser than you. I'm smarter than you. I'm better than you. And by ridicule, they elevate themselves and try to make others lower than themselves. And they do that by ridicule, by making fun of, and so on. And they try to do that by finding all the faults that someone else has. And they try to find all the inconsistencies in their life. Oh, they enjoy finding when people are inconsistent. They just really enjoy that because they can make fun of it. And you know, I've almost come to the conclusion that it seemed like no matter what we do, you could probably find some inconsistency in it. And if you want to look hard enough. But and so they make fun of people's beliefs. And, you know, they say, oh, that looks ridiculous. And just, you know, I mean, they try to find all kinds of things about their beliefs. They might scorn another person's looks, how they look. They might scorn the way that they do certain things, their actions, the way they do something, and so on. And all the time, in their purpose of scorning, is to elevate themselves. And while they don't say it with words, their actions or their scorning says, I'd never do that. I wouldn't be like that. The things that I do are right, you know. And so it's a way of lowering and belittling and putting down other people. And that is the way of scorners. Now, scorning is done, and we would expect it from unbelievers, wouldn't we? We'll get into that, and we'll see some more of that. But sadly, scorning and mocking is also done by those that call themselves believers, those that call themselves Christians. And that's a sad thing. But you see, as Christians, we have a way of dressing that up. You know, we like to do it, but we got a way of covering it up and making it look good. Because you see, we do it by giving the idea that I am more spiritual than you are. I've got it together. And while you may struggle with something, I would never do that. And my relationship with the Lord is just really great. What's the matter with you? You know, and so we have a way of dressing it up and trying to make it make it acceptable and make it look good. And there again, we it's easy for us to point out to other people, other believers, their inconsistencies and their faults and failures and so on. And we forget that Christ also died for them. We forget about their relationship with Christ. All we can see is the faults or the failures that they have in their life. Scorning is something that is so easy to see in others, and it's so hard to see in ourselves. And I guess that's the way it is with a lot of things, really. But it's so easy when we see others do it, but it's so hard to see it ourselves when we do it. And so while I want to talk about that tonight and see what's involved in some of this, it's something that we need to really, you know, look at ourselves, look at ourselves in. You know, I think that oftentimes the root of strife and contention in our homes and in our churches are really this whole thing of, I think the root cause of that is this scorning, that looking down and feeling ourselves better and so on than others, and trying to belittle someone else. Now, that's the root, but I think there's some more here. What is the cause of scorning and mocking? I want to get into some of those root causes now of this scorning and mocking. Now, going back to 2 Peter 3:3, it says, "Knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lust." Walking after their own lust. Now, those lusts there, I believe, are the root of this whole thing that we're talking about. Those lusts. What are they? Go to Proverbs 21. Found an interesting verse here. By the way, I was surprised just how much the Bible talked about this whole thing of scorning and mocking and that type of thing, and I'm not near covering all of them. But in Proverbs 21, verse 24, 23 says, "Whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles." Now, verse 24, "Proud and haughty scorner is his name, who dealeth in proud wrath." Now, I had to read that verse a couple of times to get it. But he's saying, "Proud and haughty scorner is his name, who dealeth in proud wrath." Here's a person that dealeth in proud wrath, and he's saying his name is Proud and Haughty Scorner. That's the way I'm understanding that verse. Now, we see here pride. I think pride is one of the root lust that comes with scorning. Pride and haughty. A very proud person, a person that is really dealing with pride and experiencing pride in their lives, are going to have a tendency to look down on others, aren't they? That's going to be just a natural thing that happens. I think that's one reason that God hates pride so bad, is because pride elevates ourselves. We want to sit on the taller chair, and we want to be able to look around and see what's wrong with everybody else. Pride lifts us up. And so we have that pride, I think, is one of those lusts that is there. But I see another one, too, in that verse. And I found this to be interesting. And that is anger or wrath. Anger or wrath. As I was studying this, I didn't right away pick that up, that one of the root causes of scorning is anger. Anger. Now, that doesn't seem quite right, because one of the results of scorning is laughter. You ever think about that? People scorn someone else and they try to make it appear funny. And they laugh about it. But you know, there's a laughter that is just a good laughter. Everybody enjoys a good laugh. Merry heart doth the soul good. But there's also a laughter that is a cruel laughter. It's a laughter that you laugh at people, not with people. And when a person is the brunt of that laughter, it doesn't feel good. But I think, and the more I looked at this, I realized that really the scorner is an angry person. Seems like there's a lot of anger there that is in their life. And I don't know, I'm not going to go into, I don't understand just what all causes that. But it might be something to give some thought to. But oftentimes a mocker and a person of scorning is an angry person. They have a lot of anger. And maybe that's their way of dealing with it in their life and so on. But they seem to enjoy hurting others. And they cover that up by trying to make people laugh about it. And we have to be careful. It's easy for us. And it's, you know, guys get together and they joke around with each other and so on. But you know, at the same time, we got to be careful that a person, we don't use that in a way to dig someone and a way to hurt someone. And I know I've been guilty of that already, where I found out later, you know, and just making a joke about something that somebody got hurt. And so that's something that we can really need to be careful of. In that. Jealousy is another lust, I think, that can be the root of this whole area of scorning and mocking. That we're jealous of a person, and by mocking them and scorning them, it's a way of sort of taking them down a notch in our minds and dealing with that jealousy that we're feeling towards them. Now, where does scorning and mocking take place? Where does it happen? Well, it really can happen anywhere, can it? It can even happen in church. It can even happen across the pulpit. So it can really happen anywhere. But just thinking about in our society of where it is really prevalent. It was interesting, I read a sermon on this subject, and the sermon was given, it was a copy of the sermon, back in 1824. That's almost 200 years ago. And I can't remember the name of the preacher that preached it, but as I was reading it, a phrase stood out to me. I thought it was really true. He said, and you've got to remember, this is back in 1824, he said, "The theater is the very seat of the scornful." The theater is the very seat of the scornful. Now, this was before TV and movies and all of that entertainment thing that we have and so on now. But you think of, and here again, I don't see a lot of that, but you think of how much the media loves to scorn. And how much that plays and so on, stories that come across the media, they love to point out inconsistencies in Christians. That just comes through time and again in a lot of them. They love to scorn those that are inconsistent in their lives and to pick up on that. And sometimes it can really, there's been some of those things that have brought about some things in society that have probably, in a way, been good. People see themselves, but it's something that is very prevalent. Comedians. If you take the subject of, I mean, you take what comedians do, I would say a good portion of what they do is scorning, because they just love to make fun of people and make people laugh about it. But you look at what's underneath some of that, and you'll see a lot of scorning. Taverns and drunkards. There's a place people get do some drinking and so on. And pretty soon they like to talk about this person and that person and what all the things they do wrong and all that type of thing. You see a lot of scorning. Another place a lot of scorning takes place is in intellectual circles. Intellectual circles. And it doesn't take long. You read some of the things that intellectuals talk about, and they love to scorn the poor, ignorant people that don't know anything, and especially Christians. Why, those Christians, they believe in that foolish thing called creation, and how ridiculous it is, and global warming. You know, if you don't believe in global warming, why, you're just plain stupid. matter of fact, did you realize they're starting to talk about the fact now that if you, people that don't believe in global warming, could be prosecuted, if you say you don't believe in it. And, they're even talking about maybe they could be prosecuted for it. But intellectuals have a real heyday when it comes to scorning those that they feel are beneath them. And that's a very popular sport with them. Now, here again, maybe I'm scorning them, I don't know. But I don't mean to do that, it's just that that's what they do. Another place I hear a lot of scorning, and we're in the midst of that right now in our country, and that's politics. Politics. Just think how candidates talk about each other and all the things they can find wrong with each other. And you'd think that person wouldn't even know how to get out of bed the way they talk about them. And, scorning. That's one of the things that I guess reasons why I just think that Christians have a hard time being in politics, because of all that type of thing that goes on. I'm not saying they aren't, but I'm just saying I just something that really does not go along with the Christian life there. So all around in our society, there is a lot of scorning and mocking that takes place. It's also interesting what some people scorn and mock at. I found a verse over in Isaiah 28, and here again, I don't know if I'm interpreting this verse right or not, but Isaiah 28, 14 and 15. Isaiah 28, 14 and 15, it says, "Wherefore, hear the word of the Lord, ye scornful men, that rule this people which is in Jerusalem, because ye have said, we have made a covenant with death, and with hell are we at agreement. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it shall not come unto us. For we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves." Now, here again, I'm not completely sure what all that verse is saying, but it did remind me of how scorners talk about heaven and hell, the devil, and that type of thing. You ever hear anybody say, I don't want to go to heaven. I don't have any friends there. I want to go to hell where all my friends are. And can you think of how drastic a statement that is? And yet people can make very light of that. Or I don't want to go to heaven. I want to go to, because that's all there's there is hypocrites. And I want to go to hell where there's no hypocrites at. Talking about something that is so, well, hell isn't sacred, but heaven is. But something that is so, I don't know what word I'd use there, but something that is so horrible as hell, and yet just making light of it. And it's interesting how people will do that. Another word that scorners love to mock at and so on is the word saints. You like it when people call you a saint? What do you think you are, some kind of saint? Yeah. Isn't that a mocking term? And yet a saint is a very precious term to us. As believers, we become saints. And yet people take a word like that and they use it and misuse it, and it is something that they laugh at. And yet it's something very, very precious to the believer. We also talked about hypocrites. They love to find hypocrites. The scorner does. And they love to point out hypocrites. The media loves to expose preachers that have been found in sin and so on. And you just read that all over the news media when some well-known minister is found involved in immorality or misusing money or something like that. And because they love to mock. It's a way of getting mocking the Lord and so on. They love to point out inconsistencies in people. And there is that thing about scorning that they love to do. Now, I want to say this. And that is that we can disagree without resorting to scorning and mocking. People have honest disagreements. That's just a fact of life. And not everybody understands things the same way. Some of us see something in Scripture a little differently than others do. And so I think we can have those disagreements. We can talk about them. But we do not need to resort to scorning and mocking in order to try to win that. So often what happens is two people get into a debate about something, and you know, you find yourself, well, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I can find something about that person, I can mock him. And we end up doing that. And really what that is, it's a way, it's telling us that we're not willing to really think very deeply. We're not willing to really put our minds to work and try to understand what this person is saying. And try to understand what viewpoint he's coming from and so on. It's a lot easier just to begin to mock him and try to belittle him. And we think in that way we've won the argument. So it's a sign of not thinking very deeply. Mocking and scorning is cruel. It's cruel to a person. It's crude. And it's impolite. We need to remember in dealing with other people that we're dealing with a person that is made in the image of God. You know, if we look at other people as this person is made in the image of God, that immediately does something about our relationship with that person, doesn't it? But if we just think, oh, they're just whatever, and just write them off, let me ask you something. When we do that with people, are we doing that to God? No, we wouldn't think of doing that to God. We wouldn't think of talking to God that way. But when we do it to His creation, let me ask you this. As parents, you have your children, and you see someone mocking your child. Maybe they have, I don't know, maybe there's something about them that is a little different or something, but you see someone, especially an adult, begin to mock your child. How would that make you feel? Wouldn't make you feel very good, would it? Matter of fact, I'd probably feel a little bit of anger coming up within me. What do you think God feels when He sees somebody mocking His child? I don't know, it was just a thought that came to me. Think about it. Mocking and scorning tends to harden a person. It tends to harden us. Instead of being a warm, caring person, we become a hardened person. And it seems like that caring and warmness that we should be giving out is not there. It's contagious. When people begin to mock and scorn, it seems like it has a tendency to spread to others. It's contagious. And we know that it doesn't please God. Psalm 1, verse 1. You know, it doesn't please God when we do it. Now, a couple more things. How do you respond to a scorner? None of us likes it when someone mocks us, do we? And it hurts us. It doesn't feel good. Or we see someone else doing it, and to someone else, and it doesn't feel good. How do we respond? Does the Bible say something to us what to do? Let's go to Proverbs 9. Found this interesting. Proverbs 9, 7 and 8. He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame. Ooh. He that reproveth or rebukes a scorner getteth to himself shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. What do we do with that? Sounds to me like there's not a lot we can do for a scorner. It seems like if you talk to them about it, they're going to turn on you. Now, I'm not saying we should never do it, but it just sounds like from this that when you try to talk to them about their thing of scorning, they're going to turn around and scorn you. They're going to hate you. Well, that's not very encouraging, is it? But it seems like that's the way it is. But what can we do as believers in dealing with scorners? I think there is some things we can do. We may not be able to change them, but I think there is some things we can do in how we react to them. I'm not going to turn to this. I think it's a verse that's well known, but it's in Proverbs 15, verse 1. And it says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up strife. A soft answer turns away wrath. Remember, we talked about how that wrath and anger is oftentimes at the root of scorning. And so a soft answer back to those people can turn that away. I think that's the way, one way we can do it. And then go over to Matthew chapter 5, verse 44. And this is Jesus talking. And he says there, in Matthew 5, verse 44, he says, but I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. I don't know what we think about when we think about someone cursing us. And not very often, once in a while, you have somebody that will curse you. But you know, there's a sense that scorning someone is cursing them. Scorning someone is cursing them. We're saying they're worthless. We're saying they're no good. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. And pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. And so Jesus, I think, gives us there a way of dealing with the scorner and the mocker, and a lot of other situations too. Now, what is the cure? As I said earlier, you know, it's something that any of us can be guilty of. It's something that we can do so easily, and it can happen without even trying, it seems like sometimes. What is the cure? What is the cure for it? I believe there is. One of them we mentioned already, and that is to see others in the image, as made in the image of God, like we are. Look at other people with respect. And even though they're different than we are, and even though they're not at the same place we are, look at people with respect. Respect them. They, too, are made in the image of God. Now, another thing that is a cure, and that is go to Matthew 22. Matthew 22, verse 37 to 40. And here, I think, is a real cure. Jesus said unto them, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. And you know, if we truly love the Lord with all of our heart, and we truly love our neighbor as ourself, scorning is not going to be a problem. Mocking. And I think that is if that happens in our lives, that is not going to be a problem. Another cure, over in Romans chapter 12. Now, I'd say that Matthew 22 is really the core of the cure there. But also thought of over in Romans 12. Romans 12, verse 3. He says, for I say, through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. So we looked at our chairs, and we saw that the seat of the scorner is one that's elevated. And he's telling us here not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. And when we set up and when we look around and we want to look and see the faults of everybody else, then we're elevating ourselves. We're thinking of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. But it says to think soberly. Think correctly. See things as they really are and the way that God sees them. And then one more over in Psalm 141. Psalm 141, verse 3. Here David says, "Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth, and keep the door of my lips." Oh, what a challenge that is. That we can set a watch before our mouth, and we can speak the things that are good and right. And we can bless people instead of curse them. How much better that is to sit in the seat of the blesser than to sit in the seat of the scornful. So I just trust tonight that as we think about this, that something we can meditate on, and just check ourselves. What seat am I sitting in? Do I sit in the tall one, or do I sit in the other one? And trust the Lord will work in us for that. Are there any announcements? Anyone have anything they want to say before we close? All right, let's stand together for closing prayer. Father, I thank you so much. I thank you for your word. I thank you for how your word speaks to us. And Lord, I just really pray tonight. I just pray that I can take this from your word and look at it and check myself, oh Lord. And Lord, that this whole sin of scorning and mocking might be something that I can put away. We all can put away from us. Dear God, help us to see others the way that you see them. Help us to have love for others the way that you love them. And Lord, just work in all of our hearts. We thank you so much. We just ask, Lord, that you would lead us in this coming week, that, Lord, we can walk with you, and that we can just be what you want us to be in everything. Guide us, direct us, care for us, Lord, and dismiss us now with your blessing in Jesus' name. Amen. You're dismissed. The Lord bless you.